Hello and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint, the podcast highlighting and telling the stories of influential leaders in and around the sports industry. Today, we're excited to welcome our next guest, Kadivas K.D. Robinson, to the show. Kadivas is formerly a two-time Olympian and is now one of the top coaches and trainers in the country. He is one of the most accomplished middle distance runner in USA track and field history. He went on to win 4 US indoor titles and 4 US outdoor titles, along with a pair of runner-up finishes at the US Olympic track and field trials in 2004 and 2012. Kadivas' journey starts in Fort Worth, Texas, where he picked up running and would eventually go on to have a decorated career at TCU. After a decade of being a professional runner, KD took his talents and sent the elevator back down to start coaching up-and-coming runners. He had stops on his coaching journey at UNLV and LSU before landing at The Ohio State University. KD currently lives out in Columbus, Ohio, but for the next 45 minutes, he's hanging out with us here on Checkpoint. KD, my man, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing great, man. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be alive and happy to be energetic, you know?
Oh, man, of course I know. And, you know, I try and bring the energy on all my introductions. But after the first call that we had together, I was like, man, I got to step up my game because you bring it, my man.
So everything is energy. You know how that is.
Exactly. And so, you know, for all you first time listeners just tuning in, we're going to spend the next 45 minutes on this checkpoint, understanding KD's journey from Fort Worth, Texas, you know, traveling all around the world and now helping, you know, motivate coach folks, and really just make this place a little bit better. So, KD, we're going to drive this conversation off two questions. Where are you from? Or where were you born and why were you born? So let's go ahead. Let's go where you were born. Take us back to Fort Worth and let's go on the journey.
Yeah, actually, to be quite honest with you guys, I was actually born in Dallas. But what happened is my mom had me when she was young. She had me when she was about 17 years old. She was still living with my grandmother. And my grandmother and I, over the years, and even from the day I was born, we've been extremely close. So my grandmother was like, telling my mom that, you know, she had me young and my mom needed to finish school and all those types of things. So I think she was trying to take me from my mom. And my mom said, okay, let me get up out of here. And she left, moved to Fort Worth. And that's kind of how I ended up being in Fort Worth. But I was, you know, born in, you know, the Dallas, the DFW area, lived there pretty much my whole life until I graduated from undergrad. So that's pretty much where I was born. Why I was born is to, you know, motivate, inspire, and help others. You know, you hear that a lot. You hear people say those types of things a lot, but I think for me, it's a bit different. It took me a while to get that, to find that out. Many of us, we sit back, we try to figure that out. We say, why are we here? What's our journey? What's the purpose? And it's hard to answer those questions, particularly when you're young, because you haven't had so many life experiences. But as you get older, it starts to become a little bit more clear for you. And some of us, you know, some of us get that answer from our jobs, you know, and it's like, we get so enthralled in our jobs that becomes the guide for us. But I don't know if that's the best route, because, you know, there's a saying that said, if you get your job description mixed up with your life description, you'll always find yourself at work and not at peace, you know? And so what I found is to say, you know what? My job is something that I do, but it's not necessarily who I am. But my why is to connect with everybody that comes into my sphere and my circle, because I believe in energy, right? And I believe that anyone that comes into my circle, my sphere, that I interact with in any way, shape, or form, whether it's online or in person, is to have them leave me feeling like they can become a higher version of themselves. Now, not just because I'm saying a couple of words, you know, it's more so because after you're with that person, you go, you know what? I could be doing more, or I could be doing better. And we've all had that. We've all been around someone in our lives that when we're with them, we just feel more alive, or we feel more at peace, or we feel more loving, or more, whatever that may be. And I feel like that when anyone's around me, they should leave going, you know what? I need to live at a higher level. Not because they're not living at a higher level. Living at a higher level doesn't mean you're not already living at a high level. You know, It just means that you're staying at a certain high level. And most of us, we started out that way. As kids, we did everything all out, man. We played, you know. We ate. When we slept, you know. And as we got older, life got in the way and we stopped doing that. So that's my why.
Amazing. And, you know, I mean, that's an accumulation of a lot of hard work and a hell of a journey that you've been on. And it wasn't all roses, right? I mean, we talk about, you know, what you've done on the track and, you know, people see you show up in at the Olympic Games or at these trials and they're like, oh, man, like KD's just got it. And I don't think that's how it all pans out. So if you don't mind, let's go back to those early days. When did you figure out that, like, hey, I'm pretty fast and I can take this track thing somewhere a little bit bigger than Fort Worth or Dallas, Texas?
Well, the truth of the matter is it didn't start with track. It started with football and it started with life. So in my surroundings where I was at, I was raised in the inner cities and I just realized there was more out there. I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was more out there. And going through my journey, there was a lot of individuals that made better grades than I did. There was some that was faster than I was. There was some that was voted most likely to succeed or all those things. I never was the guy that got all the girls. I never was the guy that, you know, none of that stuff, but I started realizing something. And what I realized that, you know, when things get tough in life, no matter what it is, entrepreneurship, sports, relationships, whatever it is, when things get tough, most people quit. Like, I started realizing, I'm like, man, and it don't matter where you're from. It don't matter if you're in the ghetto, it don't matter if you're rich, it don't matter if you're black, white, Hispanic, it don't matter what religion, like, everywhere in the world, when things get tough, most people, they quit. So I realized that when I was going through my challenges and as I began to progress, I said, you know what? If I just don't quit, I'll beat most people. So that gave me a level of confidence because most people quit. So if I don't quit, I'll beat most people. And so that started the journey. And I had a lot of setbacks, a lot of failures. My stepfather passed when I was a senior in high school. I've seen friends get killed. I've been around a lot, and that's not something to impress anyone. That's to impress upon them that we all go through these things, and it's called life. I don't care who you are. You can leave here and go 1,000 miles or 2,000 miles in any direction, and just randomly pick a person, and they're going through something, or they've been through something, or they're about to go through something. So I realized that. But what happens is, as you go through these things, or as you gone through them, what have you learned? What have you picked up? You know? And so for me, one of the things that I pride myself with is as I'm going through things, I don't feel like that mess should just stay a mess. I try to turn that mess into a message, you know what I'm saying? And I try to turn that test into my testimony. And when you start to do those things, I think you attract certain people, you attract a certain energy around you. And that's the way it's been looking ever since, you know, I was at TCU. I was fortunate enough to have won an NCAA championship. And mind you, you know, before everyone started thinking, oh, this guy was just good in sports and all that, no, that wasn't the case. I didn't take any official visits. The only official visit I took was to TCU. I'm from Fort Worth. That's 25 minutes away. So didn't go to no other colleges. Didn't get any full scholarship offers. I had to take out loans. This is the truth. This is live record. Take out loans. And I had to work my butt off. I had to work to get to a point where I wasn't having to, work and get loans and all those types of things. So it wasn't like an automatic. I never won a state meet. I only made the state meet my senior year, only once. And when I made it, I only got fourth in my event. So I'm just a guy, you know, seriously. Yeah. It was nothing inherently special about me. But again, I did realize something. I realized that if you didn't quit, and I know this sounds like a cliche, that you'll beat most people. So I realized, you know what, let me stick with this real quick. And as I stuck with it, I learned things from it. And as I learned, I continued to get better. And that's a skill set. And a skill set can be developed and it can be improved by just repetition. And who can do that? Anybody. So that's what I've done along with this journey.
That's incredible. And now I'm really curious, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different track events and, you know, I don't think it's by mistake that you chose the one that maybe everyone quits the first time they do it because the 800 is no joke. So I gotta poke and prod a little bit. Why did you choose that event? And when did you realize, yo, I'm doing the damn thing and people are quitting around me, but I'm sticking with it.
So where I'm from, a lot of in the inner city where I'm from, it's not much distance running. Everybody does sprints. And again, I realized everybody wanted to do the sprints. Nobody wanted to do the longer distance. And again, the 800 is the hardest event in track and field. So being naive, I thought, okay, if I do the hardest event, a lot of people are not going to want to run it, you know? So that's one of the reasons I ran. Now, it ain't like it felt good to me or anything, but I just feel like by process of elimination, I was going to eliminate most of my competition, you know, just off the bat. And it's still the same. Even to this day, man, it comes down to pain and going through things. It's an analogy for life. The thing about the 800 that makes it unique is that you got to have a little bit of everything. You see, in sprints, the short sprints, by the time it starts hurting, you finish, you know? Yeah. And in the distance running is running while tired, you know? But, you know, you don't, some distance races, you don't really have to have so much speed, right? In the 800, you got to have the speed and you got to have the endurance and the stamina, right? But then also when you think about it, for distance races, you can, you know, it's not lanes necessarily. But the 800, you do stay in your lane for the first curve or whatever. And then, but then you got to share lanes with people. So you got to have tactics. So it's so much involved with the 800. It's like playing chess, you know, and I love chess. And one of the top 800 meter runners of all time was this Wilson Kipketer from, he's Kenyan, but he lived in Denmark. He said, this wasn't me. He's much better than I was. But he said, man, he felt like running the 800 was something like playing poker. He said, just by knowing how to do it, he would always be competitive. And that's how I felt, because it's a lot of factors that go into it. Because my talent, when you match my talent up against most individuals that end up being top 10 in the world, those guys are way more talented than I was. I mean, seriously, my success came from developing that skill set.
Wow. And I mean, it sounds like were not only doing it on the physical side, but the mental side as well. And I think those two had to go hand in hand in order to go ahead and obviously take it to the level of where you took it. So I want to get behind the scenes. You finish up at TCU. What does that journey look like on the road to the Olympics? How did you get picked up? And what was that like for you as you were sort of going through this as a young man?
You know, I never, you know, up until my senior year, I really didn't think about running professional. I was going to get my degree in social work. My goal was to go to law school. And by my senior year, I started doing pretty good. I wasn't necessarily, you know, I hadn't won nationals yet. And I remember asking my coach, I said, what would I need to do to run professionally? He said, oh, if you run 146 or if you, you know, get top three at nationals, you'll have a chance. So then it popped in my head, do I really want to start working immediately after college? Like, you know, or do I want to? The Olympics was going to be, that was 98. The Olympics was going to be some 2 years later. And I'm like, you know what? If I do that well, why not try for it, right? I mean, at least try it. And I end up, you know, lo and behold, I end up winning a national championship. And so these opportunities presented themselves. Now, let me tell you something. We all get opportunities in life. Whoever's watching this, everybody in life get opportunities. We don't get the same time, we don't get the same type, we don't get the same amount. I mean, I'll tell you that. Everybody's not going to get the opportunity to go run professional. I get that. But you're getting opportunities to start your own business. You're getting opportunities to work for your family, whatever that may be. So I started getting presented with an opportunity. And ironically enough, when the opportunity arose for me to go run for the Santa Monica Track Club in Santa Monica, California, I didn't want to go. I actually didn't want to go. And I remember people saying, KD, what are you talking about, dude? You got a chance to go to Santa Monica, California, where the beach is at, and run. But I had just graduated from college. I was a national champion. My girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, she was there. She had just graduated. So I'm living the life, man. Everything's going well. I'm in my hometown. But you know what they say, man? A prophet isn't a prophet in his hometown. So it's like, no matter how good you do or what you believe, people are going to remember you from when you was younger. You know, it's like if I stayed there and I tell somebody, hey, man, you know, if you don't do this, this, and that, you can be here. And they're going to look at me like, dude, I remember you 10 years ago. You did the same thing I was doing. So my point is, I think it ended up being a good thing for me to choose to move and go to California. And I tell you, when I first moved there, I didn't like it. I didn't like it for about 9 months. It was so different than where I was from. And then right after that 9 months, I started liking it about a year and a half. And then after 2 years, I loved it. So those opportunities that presented themselves, I took a risk. It is a risk. It's not guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed. And then after I took the risk, I ran with it.
That's incredible. And you know, those risks, right, once you overcome that fear and you get in it, then it just becomes your version of reality. And, you know, again, there's opportunities that present themselves in everyone's version of reality. Now the next step is, okay, so you get out, you start training in California. I believe a couple years later, I don't know, the 2000 games, did you end up making the 2000 games or was 2004?
So 2000 is a turning point in my life. And we've all had this. We've all had this. I won first year out of college. I win the USA indoor and outdoor national championship. Just off the bat, hit a home run. So the next year, 2000, I'm running well. I'm running really well. I'm ranked number one in the U.S., hadn't lost to an American, top 15 or whatever, 20 in the world. I go to the trials, and this is the honest to God truth. I was training hard. I was very fit, extremely thin. And I remember leading up to the trials, my coach rested me up, because you can rest up for the Olympic trials. But when you train like that and you're used to using that energy from training and racing and you rest, now you have an abundance of energy. So at the time, as a rookie, I didn't know what to do with that extra energy. So I would just go for walks and all this. And I went for a walk, and I remember I smelt this flower. Sound like nothing big. Like you go for a walk, you're in Santa Monica, you see a freaking flower, you smell the flower. And as soon as I smelled it, I went, and I was like, and I was allergic to it, didn't know it. And so my nose got stopped, but it wasn't like a bad reaction. I didn't get hives or anything like that, but I got really clogged up. Went to the trials, made it through the first two rounds, and then couldn't sleep the whole time, couldn't breathe. And in the finals, I ended up getting fourth. They only take three. I got fourth. Now, mind you, I thought I was gonna win. The idea of not winning was like, I beat all these guys, I'm a defending champion. I'm gonna get second. Okay, if I have a bad race, I'm gonna get third. It never crossed my mind that I would get fourth. I mean, it was like, I never entertained the idea. Like, it's just, I don't even know. I just didn't even think about it, but I did. I got fourth. And I remember this, and this is what I tell people. This is one of the turning points in my life. I lived in Santa Monica, California. I'm 23 years old, was the defending national champion, got a contract, had been running pros. It's the summer. Santa Monica, you can walk out of my apartment and look and you can see the water, man. I could jog there in 8 minutes or whatever, right? I'm in Santa Monica, this is July, in the summer. And I'm sitting in Santa Monica and I'm in my apartment and I'm twiddling my thumbs because I didn't know what to do. Because it never occurred to me that I wasn't gonna make the Olympic team. Like, it's just like, and I remember people thinking, man, what are you talking about? Okay, you didn't make it, but you can go run other races, or you can do all this stuff, and you're still a professional athlete, you still got your contract. But man, I wasn't thinking about that. I wanted to make the Olympic team.
Yeah.
But I remember I told myself, because I was lost, man. I mean, I was literally lost. I remember sitting in my apartment. I remember it like, it was almost like I had nothing. But I had everything, but it's like I had nothing. I don't know how to explain that, really.
No, I get that.
I remember telling myself never again. Like, never again. Like, in other words, I'm going to have a more balanced life. I had put so much in that, which is good, but you got to put everything in it, but you also got to have a balance. You got to have other things in life. So end up not making it. And so I made a decision at that time that I was going to stay at it for another 4 years and make an Olympic team. And so that's what the decision I decided to make.
Man, and those, you know, we always talk about getting to the mountain we think is, or getting to the top of the mountain is the hardest climb. I think staying at the top of the mountain is even harder. And so it's really interesting to hear that it sort of took that oh shit moment of like, I'm not at the top anymore, to go ahead and sort of have that gut check. Now, I'm curious, before we continue on with your journey, did you find a lot of other Olympian and professional athletes to sort of have that same mentality, whereas if the Olympics does not work out, I don't have a fallback plan?
The top ones who really feel like and know they're going to make it, they probably didn't, because this is a hard thing to get. And I have a presentation that I do that's called Developing the Champion's Mindset. Champions and winners think a certain way. We're not entertaining the idea of not doing well. We're not entertaining the idea of not making it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it pops in there, we're not gonna hold on to it for too long, right? So that's a common theme for a lot of individuals in their specific sphere, you know, that if they're trying to do something, they're not putting a lot of time and energy on if it doesn't work out. They're using that time and energy on making it work out. And, you know, and once it, if it doesn't, you adjust, pivot it, and adapt, right? And then you go forward from there.
Yeah, I think that's been one of the most interesting things, KD, as we've had athletes come on, Super Bowl champions, Olympians, everything in between. trying to find that balance of how do you develop holistically as a human? So when you do fall or come down or transition, you don't have to go all the way back down to ground zero, but balance that with that winning mentality where it's like, I have blinders on and all I'm focusing. And I think if anybody listening can crack that code, it's the $1 million answer, but it's really interesting hearing everyone's unique perspective and journey through it. So go ahead.
Okay. It only exists from a relative standpoint. What do I mean? I mean, once the person realizes that, then what he does or he or she does is now they balance it within their framework. But for somebody on the outside, if they was to watch them, it still doesn't look balanced. You know what I mean? It's still a bit. People used to always say to me, I didn't know this, but people used to always say to me, you were so focused. I know I was focused, but I didn't think I was so focused that I wasn't like still cool or still like whatever the word is. I thought I was focused, but I still thought I was, you know, a normal, you know, 24-year-old guy until I got out of it. And I see other athletes that I coach. I'm like, dang, like maybe I was, because some of the stuff they do and stuff, I'm like, oh, I didn't have, that wasn't even on my mind. Like, are you serious? Like, so you have to be a bit obsessed. I don't know if obsessed is the right word, but you have to be that, because that's one of the, that's one of the attributes one must have, is that you have to be so plugged in. I remember I was in Monte Carlo once. I'm gonna give you an idea. I didn't know this was, again, remember, a lot of us, a lot of high caliber individuals, it ain't just athletes, it's people who,
yep,
Warren Buffett's or Steve Jobs or whomever, the presidents and all of, a lot of us, it takes us a while to understand it. Everybody don't think this way. At first, we think everybody who's trying to perform well thinks this way. We're like, okay, of course you think this way if you're trying to be the top of whatever you're in. But then we realize they don't. One time I was in Monte Carlo. Beautiful. We're in, the Fairmont Hotel. It's just, this hotel's so nice. I think burgers was like $25 or $50. I mean, everything's so expensive. I mean, it's like it's something you see on TV, man. Real talk. And I've been now.
Yeah.
I've been so many times, and I remember we were there and I was talking to another athlete and the Prince of Monaco would have a party, a big gala. And then after the meet, you could go to this gala for free and they would have people dance and they have all this food and they just have, it's just a big gala. And everybody was going to the gala and me and my friend was kind of outside the gala just talking. We went into the grass and the eating came out. We just stayed for the festivities this particular time. And he looked at me, he said, Katie, you know what, man? To do what we do, you gotta be kind of crazy. I said, what do you mean? He said, think about it. He said, we get up and we train hard until we hurting, until we sore, until we sweating, until we tired, until we can't move. Maybe we throw up. We train as hard as we can. And then we go back and we don't go out, we don't party, we don't drink, we don't do none of this fun stuff. And then we get up the next day and we do it again. That's not normal. And so, but when you're in that, that is your normal, you know? Mm. So when you start talking about these high performers and the way they think, that's why they high performers. See, it's the way they think that's really the reason they high performers. Now you gotta have a skill set or you gotta have some talent or ability, but if you didn't have a talent or ability, you probably wouldn't be in that space. But once you're in that space and you have some type of talent or ability, then that's what makes Tom Brady Tom Brady. Can he throw a perfect pass? Yeah, but it's a couple of guys that throw a perfect pass. But it's that mentality he has, you know? And that goes with the person that makes straight A's at Harvard, you know, or the person that started their own business at 19 or whatever the situation may be. And that can be developed. It can. It can be developed by being conscious of these things.
That's the real estate between our two ears from every high performing individual is the most valuable real estate, that not only do they train their body, like you said, to get them in a space, but they double down on this. And this is the competitive advantage, because when you're running a race in Athens or in London, I mean, we're talking about fractions of a second that separate a champion from eighth place. I mean, the margin of victory, you can't get it, you know, you can't get that competitive edge on the track. And so it's just so fascinating to hear how these mindsets are developed and how early on they're developed, right? Like a lot of people we talk to said, I was a professional football player when I was playing middle school and high school football. I already knew, right? It was just a matter of going and living out the journey. Yours is a little bit different on how you got there, but you just, it was a war of attrition. You said, I'll just outwork everybody and develop along the way. So for the sake of time, I know we're glossing over a few championships that you run. I want to go to Athens, though. 2004, I believe this was your first Olympics. You finally made it to the stage. You overcame adversity. What was it like opening ceremony? Are there any moments or you know, memories that stick out to you?
I'm going to tell you something that's going to trip you out. So trip everybody out. I don't talk about it much. Our training camp was in Crete, in Greece. So Crete is a little island. And so our training camp was there because we didn't want to go into Athens too early because it was really, really hot and, smog and all that type of stuff and a lot of distractions. So what we would have to do was take a boat or a plane ride over to Athens for the opening ceremonies. Now, depending on when your event is, you could stay or you could come back. Because if your event was early, you just stayed. I used to go in there and coming back and moving twice. But if your event was later, you would go and come back just because it's a lot of distractions and stuff going on. So I didn't go. The first Olympics, no, I didn't go to the opening ceremonies. I don't believe in regrets. If there's only any regret I ever have, it would be that. Because I didn't go because I was like, okay, I don't want to go. And I was so focused on running. Now, luckily for me, I made another Olympic team in 2012, and I did go to the opening ceremonies. But 2004, I didn't go. It was an amazing trip. Everything was great. Man, Olympics are Olympics. I tell everybody, you got to go to one. You can't. It's nothing like that nowhere else in the world, bar none. But I don't care. Not only just from an athlete standpoint, but just from a fan standpoint. Because you got people from all over the world, literally. Like, we ain't talking about the NFL Super Bowl, where it's just the Super Bowl in the U.S. We're talking about literally the entire world, right? When you got Lord knows how many different sports, right? You got all these different countries, all these different sports, all these different athletes. I mean, you got athletes that's there that play, you know, soccer or basketball or golf. And I'm talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. Then you got some athletes that are really, really good and they still considered amateur, right? It's the most amazing, and they're all there for something positive. Like, everybody's there is happy. Nobody's at the Olympic Games just there, just, man, I wish I wasn't here. Everybody there is glad. They wouldn't want to be nowhere else. Nowhere else but at the Olympic Games right now. And so that's the energy that you get from Olympic Games. And then the fact that it was in Athens, Greece, home of the Olympics and all those types of things, made it an exciting journey. I had some friends and family that came. And so it was pretty amazing.
Wow. And you know, just to go back to the earlier segment, you talk about to be an elite athlete, you think you're normal, but you're a little crazy. Yeah. You missed the opening ceremony in preparation for the race. If that doesn't sum this whole thing up, man, I don't know what's going to. And at the time, it's like, that's normal, right? Like, this is just what I got to do. Yeah, so
I wasn't the only person that did that now. I mean, it was
of course.
Did that, because you're at the time, you're thinking about performing, right? And so you say, well, it won't affect you. But what people don't know about the opening ceremonies is by the time you see it, we've been standing there and walking for hours, like literally. Yeah. It's like we got it because you got all these different countries, and then you have the village, and then in the village, each country have like a hotel or whatever, and you start there, and then you all go, and then they put you, as you know, when the Olympics start, they call out the names of the countries in a certain order, so you got to line up in order. You got all these different countries, man, and you're not just talking about like they're not just calling the basketball team for France. It's like France, but it's the whole, you know, you got all of their sports that's going. And U.S., you know, if they go in alphabetical order, you can kind of see where we would be at, right? So you got to understand that that's a lot of standing on your feet. And if it's hot, which it was in Greece, then, you know, that's, and you got to wear that, you wear the, it's called the Olympic, the opening ceremonies uniform or whatever you want to call it. And so it can become a much. Now, that was a decision I made at the time, thinking that it would, you know, it would make that much of a difference. It could or couldn't. But the point is, it sounds abnormal to the average person or the person who's watching. But for athletes, a lot of us, we had to take those things into consideration.
And it takes one to know one, right? Like, I mean, I've been in situations where you want to go and absorb. You're playing in front of 100,000 people, or you're at the cool, you know, parade before, but we're here for a job, right? Like, at the end of the day, we are here to execute on one thing and one thing only. And so that totally resonates with me. I think it'll resonate with a lot of listeners. It's just really cool to hear that. Now, unfortunately, we're going to, you know, again, for time, we're going to skip through London. We'll maybe have to get you back on because I want to go through all of your races. But I think, you know, you reach a point in your career where you get to success and you're able to send the elevator back down and start taking all the perspective that you've got from your journey and start elevating the next generation up. So go ahead and fill the listeners in on what that transition looked like from professional runner to your coaching days.
So, yeah, I started coaching before I retired, and that happened a little bit by accident, to be quite honest. I was my goal in 2004. Right before I made the Olympic team, I finished my master's degree. I got a master's degree in public administration. So I started preparing for life after sports a bit early. Just so happens, I started coaching. I coached some professionals. I coached a high school, all girls Catholic high school team. And then I started coaching at UNLV and then, of course, LSU and Ohio State. So I did start preparing for life afterwards. And that's hard for a lot of people. You've been an athlete. For some of us, we've been athletes our whole lives. And so to go from being an athlete to a different field or something else, it can be an identity shock. And everybody goes through it. It's not just for athletes. Sometimes you go from being, I see parents do that. They go from being a parent for as a mommy and a daddy. And when their kids graduate and move out the house, it's like, who am I now, right? Or a dad might go through being, the homemaker, whatever you want to call it. And like, now he that's not the case anymore. And so now he feels a little lost. So that's kind of what happens. But what I learned is that you take the same attributes, you take the same skill set, you take the same thinking process, and you put it into everything else you're doing. A lot of people, that's what they don't do. A lot of people, they're especially men, like we're beasts. We're beasts at work. You go to work, man, you see men stick their chest out. They're very proactive. They're leaders. They're considerate. They're go-getters, man. They listen to their, and then they go to, they're at home, they're just regular, man. They're just regular. And the thing is, if you're a beast, you should be a beast on all levels. A lion isn't just a lion when he got to fight this young lion because he's protecting all these, his cubs. A lion's a lion no matter where they go. And that's something that I think a lot of humans, we don't do. It's like, we don't keep that high level. Once you make an Olympic team, it says, once an Olympian, always an Olympian. And I tell everybody I meet that was an Olympian or a world-class athlete or whatever. When I see them, I say, now listen, I told Wallace Berman this on my podcast. Okay, you're no longer a world-class athlete, even though he has one more year. I'm saying, once you're no longer a world-class athlete, your world-class days are not over. Once you stop being a world-class athlete, you should be a world-class husband, a world-class father, a world-class son, a world-class brother, and a world-class human being. Some people, after they get to a certain, they want to chill. You got individuals that were made straight A's in school, and once they graduate high school or college, they navigate at the B-minus level. Who is this person? Why navigate that way? Just because it got tougher?
So, well, and you know what's interesting, though, is I think a correlation here is good coaching, because as an athlete, you have somebody to hold you accountable. You have somebody to push you outside of your comfort zone because they know you have more in the tank. And that is one-to-one in sports. When you get into the real world, we don't really have coaches per se. We're starting to see them come up now, Scott, but you're starting to fill that role.
Scott, think about this. You've interviewed a lot of high-level, high-performing individuals in just regular life and in sports. How many of those individuals have mentors or speak of their mentors?
Everyone.
Every last one of them. Success leads clues. Success leads clues. And failure does too. So if you tell me that every high-level, high-performing individual, I'm talking about in banking, I'm talking about in entrepreneurship, I'm talking about in relationships, I'm talking about in sports, I'm talking about in everything in life, no matter what it is, every single one of them, Elon Musk, Warren Buffett, you name them, presidents, 100%, then that tells me something. I should get a mentor. So I tell people this all the time, and they think, because I'm a mentor and I'm a life coach, I do that I work with people. I think they might think I'm saying that because it's a sales pitch. And I'm like, no, it don't have to be me. I'm just saying, success leaves clues. There's a correlation there. Every single person had a coach or a mentor. And now we're trying to do it on our own. I mean, this is where I put it, which I think athletes get this. I say, who's the greatest boxer of all time? They say, okay, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali had a coach. Who's the greatest, they say, golfer of all time? Even if they say Tiger Woods, I'm like, Tiger Woods got a coach. Like, who's the greatest basketball? Michael Jordan, he got a coach. Like, everyone who's the greatest, even though they're the greatest, they still got coaches. That's a freaking clue. Mm. And then you go, you talk to people even in the financial industry. You talk to the Elon Musk. You hear the interviews with Warren Buffett. You hear the interviews with, you know, presidents and all, like, my mentor. You hear presidents. When I was I had this mentor. And, like, and you want to do it on your own? And, well, I can't afford one. You can't afford not to have one. But, see, that's the thing. That's the difference. It's I hear people always saying that it's this and it's that and it's this and it's that. No, it's not. That's a clue that I try to share with everybody. I say, man, you need a mentor and a coach. And then they think if they get one, everything magically happens and goes perfect. It don't work that way. You can have a mentor and coach and things go terrible. That's why you need one. Not because things go so well. And so I get so passionate about this because it's something simple. And you think, man, this is nothing. Anybody can do it, and they just won't do it. And they come and they say, well, this don't work and that didn't work. And they starting their own business, or they trying to get in better relationships, or they trying to feel happier. And they keep, and you're going, man, listen, you gotta get a mentor. You have to. And they just won't do it. And then you see them a year later, 2 years later, and they still struggling. You're like, are you aware? There are people who've gone through what you've gone through and overcome it and helped others. And all you gotta do is get them on as a mentor.
Well, and I think it's a mindset from the mentee, because a lot of people don't know how to be coached. And I think that, you know, has to go back to the way that we educate. Like, we don't always know how to differentiate between tough love and bullying or just being crass, right? And so, you know, what practice leads to permanent. And so that coach is there. How many times when you were running off season, did you have terrible track days? Did you have days where you slipped coming out of the blocks, right? And so it's not instant. It's not the right, but it's you compound success, and it takes a lot of failure to sometimes find what that success is. But once you get it and you have that mentor, KD, you know what surrounds you? Successful people, right? Because that mentor's entourage comes along. And so it's not, it takes a tribe in order to go ahead and transition. And I think a lot of people want to have this as their singular journey. And that's a really interesting through line you bring there that I think a lot of people can listen to. If you're stuck, if you're in a rut, go surround yourself with positive people and positive things will start to happen. I guarantee it. And my last little piece here before we go ahead and transition to some of the other positive work you're doing is that fear is usually the biggest hurdle that folks have to come over. And just remember that fear is false evidence appearing real. Get that through your head, break all the fear barriers down, and just do it. It's why I wear my Nike hat. Just do it and see where the world takes you. What you got for me?
Think about this. I tell people to start out, I say, you gotta learn the difference between constructive criticism and destructive criticism. Constructive criticism is a coach or a mentor or person criticizing you to help you get better. So you need that criticism. They're criticizing you so you can get better. Destructive criticism is them criticizing you to bring you down. You don't want that. You don't need destructive. So learn the difference between constructive criticism and destructive criticism. And then once you're getting it, you'll get better. I do that after every show like this. I'll text you and say, Scott, you know, I want you to be critical. What could I have done better? What I did better? And I'll tell you, I say, don't worry. Don't think I'm going to get upset. I understand the difference between constructive criticism and destructive criticism. We need it. I need this to get better. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, when I'm mentoring someone, when I'm coaching someone, I tell them this: if you're coachable, trainable, and teachable, I'll make you unstoppable. Coachable, trainable, and teachable. Now, why is that? I'm gonna tell you why. 70 to 90% of success is simply following instructions. If a person wanna be an investor, he goes to work with Warren Buffett, or he goes to work with Elon Musk. If they just follow the instructions, they're gonna be somewhat successful. But most people won't do that. Most people quit, and most people, a person wants to go to Michael Jordan or Stephen Curry and say, how do I become 90% of the free throws? Stephen Curry might say, turn your leg this way and shoot like this 100 shots every single day. Most people are going to be like, well, what about if my legs start hurting? I didn't say that. I said, turn your leg this way and shoot like this every single day. What about on Sunday when I have church? Every single day. What if it's raining? Every single day. What if I feel sick? That's what happened. I wanted to go back to that when you say most people are not coachable. That's true. They're not coachable. So you be coachable, trainable, teachable. I can make you unstoppable, right? Learn the difference between constructive criticism and destructive criticism. And one more thing before we go forward, I wanted to say this because the second time you brought up fear. Fear is not real. Now, I know people, this is going to be a shock to a lot of people. And it's a shock to me. And the reason it's not real is because God or the universe didn't create fear. I don't want to go through all the religions, but every religion will tell you that. It'll say, fear not. Fear not. Now, as we progressed, fear became a definition of something. So as it says, you should fear God, it doesn't mean the same fear that people have. Fear is an energy in a way that we perceive something. Why is that? Because one person will perceive and see something and they'll get nothing in there. It's just an energy. Now, once you get that energy, if that energy becomes a positive energy that you can proactively work on, then it's excitement. But if it becomes one that makes you scared or freeze, then that's what we call fear. What we focus on the longest becomes the strongest. So now if we perceive that as fear and you give it more energy, it becomes a big fear. Okay, I'll give you an example. A lot of us, when we was kids, we was afraid of the boogeyman up under our bed. There's no freaking boogeyman up under the bed. Right? And once you realize that, where did the fear go? It's the same energy. It's just,
yeah.
So I understand you getting afraid, but understand when you get that feeling that we describe as fear, understand that it's just, now danger is real. Don't get it twisted. I'm not saying danger is real. Like there's things, but I'm saying once you see some, it's like the deer that's there and the car comes. Well, that big rush of energy comes. Now some use that energy and get the hell up out of there, and some are using it so they freeze. It's just energy, man. Are you gonna use it to fight it off or run? Or are you gonna and then freeze? Learn that it's going to be a natural thing that comes. It's just energy. It's going to come. Stop thinking like, oh, you know, even if it don't come in this situation, it come in some other. You got people that could go to war and don't have no nervousness or nothing. And then they'll go see a bridge and they can't cross the bridge. They have a phobia of bridges. Or you have people that have a phobia of little things. You're like, man, you got a phobia of being in elevators. But this same person would go jump out of a plane or something. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's just an energy. And it's how you perceive that energy.
And you can control so much around that, right? You know, meditation has become really big. Breathing techniques. I would encourage everybody, stop pretending like fear is not going to creep into your mind because it creeps into everybody's. Let's stop pretending and now start building a tool set to become that champion in the mentality, right? So if I know I can control my breathing, okay, when I start to get this feeling, guess where I can go? That's my competitive advantage. I can get back to neutral and then I'm in control again. And I think that that's exactly right. Really well said. We're going to turn the corner here, KD. I want to give you a chance to talk about your nonprofit. I think you guys are doing some incredible things over there with Youth Track and Running Club. So go ahead, fill the listeners into what you guys have built over there and where they can find and support those efforts.
Yeah, so I started the Youth Track and Running Club years ago in California. When I moved, I let my co-founders continue to run that. I stepped away from that. Now I got another nonprofit called the Reading and Running Initiative. It's a new one. It literally just started. I just got my tax exempt status. So the reason I brought that up, and this is important, the Reading and Running Initiative is a play on words. What I learned, and it's coming from Will Smith, which is funny enough, is that every problem that has ever occurred in the world, every single one, someone else has had it. And the person, those people have had it, they've gone through it and they've written about it. So reading is one of the ways that we can educate ourselves and equip ourselves for success. Because any problem we might have, any issue we might have, we can go find a solution for it. Now, we still got to put the work in, but we can find a solution. Running is another important, because I don't care who you are. You can be the Olympic champion. If you run long enough, a voice is going to creep in your head and say, man, why are you running? Stop. Go easier. Go slower. This hurts. It's sweating. It's hot out here. My stomach, whatever. That voice is going to keep trying to tell you to either slow down or stop running. If you can defeat that voice, now you're on your way. Because we all get the voice. That voice don't just come when you run. The voice comes when you try anything major in your life. Any goal you have. It could be you want to go talk to this girl and ask her out. That voice comes. Man, she's going to turn you down. It could be starting your own business. That voice comes. Why take a risk? It could be traveling to another country. That voice comes. You need to save your money. It's the same freaking voice. And it keeps telling you to be afraid or to sit back or don't take risks or whatever. And if you learn to quiet that voice, if you learn to defeat that voice, you're going to be on your way. Now, let me tell you something. I didn't say the voice wouldn't come. The voice going to always come. The voice is just there. It's just like planting a garden. If you go outside today and you plant a garden, the weeds just grow. You didn't plant the weeds. Who do you know plant weeds? Nobody. You see them out there pulling them up. That's how negativity comes into our head. It just comes from nowhere. You're like, what the hell? I know I've been wanting to do this my life. My whole life I wanted to do this. And now I'm here. I found myself at like that the Olympics. I'm in the Olympics. I'm shaking and nervous. And I'm like, what the heck? I'm at the freaking Olympics. I've been wanting this for so long. Why am I so nervous? But that's how it works. So what we do is equip ourselves with mentors, with coaches. You partner with positive, powerful people, and you get through it. It's called life, man. And I just really wish. See, a mind expanded never goes back to its original form. Meaning, once you know something, you can't not know it. Your wife, if you were to wake up today, Scott, or tomorrow morning, and you make this great breakfast, fluffy pancakes, some fruit, freshly squeezed orange juice, cinnamon on the pan, the whole nine. Your wife gonna look at you and be like, Scott, I didn't know you could cook this well for breakfast. Now does she know that? She cannot not know that. She gonna always know. Scott can get up and feed me some breakfast, some good breakfast. A mind expanded can never go back to its original form. So once we know something, we cannot not know it really, unless something happens. So I said it to say this. Once I know, and I can look at you, Les Brown used to look at people, and he still do. He look at people and say, I see greatness in you. Once you're able to see people and see that they got greatness in them, man, it's tough, because you're seeing them navigating at this level, knowing they can navigate here. A lot of us got kids, and we know our kids got more. They can't see it, but we can see it. We know they can do better in whatever it is. And we just want to be like, sometimes we know they can walk when they first learn how to walk, and then they'll try and they'll fall, and they'll just say forget, and they'll crawl a little bit. And we just want to pick them up, and can we know? But no, they're not ready yet. That's how I feel sometimes. I go around, I see people that they're this close. It's this close. And I'm knowing that most people, when things get hard, they quit. And I'm just hoping they don't quit. I'm hoping they reach out to somebody. And that's kind of what this whole journey is about. No one's inherently better or special. God made us all. And if God put us here, he put us here for a purpose. And most people are just going through life. They're just going to work and eating the same foods and, you know, doing the same stuff. And they have the ability to make a massive change in the world. So when they gone out of here, their energy will live on. And so that's the thing that's why I like these shows. Because if I can just reach one person, just one, that's right now debating on if they should just continue to do this business or continue to travel overseas or whatever it may be, and they try. And listen, I'm not saying you're going to try this stuff and you're going to be successful, because that's life is everything in between. But at least you went for it. Scott, what sport did you play in college?
I was a college football punter. I was a football player.
Okay, you a punter, right? So let's say you know you could punt it 50 yards or whatever it is, right?
Yep.
And you get it, and for whatever reason, you just like take off running with the ball. Like for the rest of your, let's say it's a major game, and something happens. The rest of your life, you're going to be looking like, damn, I should have punted it for 50 freaking yards, right? That's how life is. It's like people go through life knowing they have this ability, and they won't try it. It's like, I put some on my Instagram page, and I'm going to tell you the answer now, because they done figured it out. I say, if you're playing a basketball game, you're in a championship game, y'all down by 2 points, and your teammates Your teammates is Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, LeBron James, and Kobe Bryant. Those are your teammates. Kobe Bryant, Larry Bird, LeBron James, and Michael Jordan, right? Those are your teammates. You got the ball. Y'all down by 2 points. It's like 10 seconds left. What do you do with the ball?
I'm shooting the ball.
You damn right. That's my point. Now, I got I got people, they're gonna start debating this crazy stuff. I mean, and don't get me wrong, they're gonna, well, you know, such and such is better at three-pointers, and this person, Michael's the greatest, and whatever. And I'm like, are you serious? This the championship? We down by two? I got the ball? I'm shooting it because they shoot it and miss it. For the rest of my life, I'll be looking back and like, I could have missed it.
I mean, look, we just saw that with LeBron and Danny Green. And, you know, just this, you know, we just saw it. And I think, you know, what's really interesting there is when you put the work in, you have this unequivocal confidence about yourself, right? And so it's not to say that, you know, Kobe, MJ, they may be better at that, but it's almost in the moment, it's paralysis by analysis. And so if I got to sit here and think of these four people to pass the ball to, shit, it's my shot. I put just as much work in. I belong here. I'm on the court with these guys. It's my shot. Go ahead.
Let me tell you this theory on why I think LeBron passed the ball. I'm going to tell you something, and this is – I've studied this for a while. LeBron's different, man. LeBron, I'm serious about this. This is gonna sound like LeBron's a different type of good. He's a different type of great, seriously. Like you got to talk to his teammates who he played with. LeBron is on a whole nother level, seriously. LeBron knew that they could win whenever they needed to win. But him doing that sets up something different. LeBron is almost like a coach on the field. I don't know if people have noticed that. And you know why you can tell that that's the case? Because everywhere he goes, they win. No matter who's on his team, everywhere they go, the guy done been in like, Lord knows how many NBA finals in a row.
Nine or 10, I think, in a row.
It's crazy. Like, you miss one here and go, no matter who the player is. All the players, think about this. 90% of the players that LeBron played with in other places, a lot of them don't go do nothing else, meaning after he leave or before. So he can go somewhere, and they could have been terrible the year before. And within 2 years, they're in the NBA Finals. Every place he's gone to. So I think he did that looking at not only this year, I think he knew they could win, but setting these guys up the next year, the next year. That's what I believe, because it would have been easy for him to shoot it. But when you look at LeBron, he does certain things on the court and after the court, and from what he says, because he never just disses nobody. There's times in which you can see that somebody messed up, and it'll be all right for him to be like, man, JR should have won. He don't go there. So you know he's thinking like a coach. So everybody's saying he should have shot this and that. No, if you know you can come back and win the next game by 20 or whatever, then okay, give my boy a time to be whatever. You know, and so I think that, but the point is, you're right. If I got the ball two points, we down by two, 10 seconds left in the game, I'm shooting it. I'm shooting a three at that, because that's the mindset I have. But a lot of people, they don't want to take that chance, and then they'll sit back and go, well, I didn't have the opportunity, or that person just shoots more than I do, or whatever the excuse is. Man, this is your life. It's true. Whatever goal you have in your life, you better get going. I'm aware of that right now. Whatever goal I have in life, nobody's sitting around going, man, I wonder how KD doing. I wonder if Kadeemus Robinson needs some help getting this nonprofit going. I wonder if Kadeemus Robinson needs more speaking engagement. I wonder if he, nobody's doing that. They too busy living their own lives. And then the goals I have, I don't know if they believe in my goal the way I do. So now when I'm telling them my goal, they may think I'm crazy. So I got to put all this energy, all this effort in, and the harder things are, the more you're gonna fail. Some things take time. Now you can get it takes 9 months to have a baby for the most part, right? You can try to do it in three, but I don't suggest it. Some things take time, and during that time, which things going on during that time? Failure.
Guys, success leaves clues. Here's another one that took it all the way to the top, and another one that sent the elevator all the way back down, and defined success by reaching one and teaching one. And right. KD, I got to tell you, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. I mean, the energy, the journey, the nuggets. I mean, this is just chock full of amazing stuff that I think everybody, athletes and non-athletes, can take and directly apply to their life. And so just so you know, we're launching a subsequent series called Check In. So every 3 to 6 months, we're going to get you back on the screen. We're going to check in on the Buckeyes, see how you guys are handling things during COVID. We're going to go ahead and check in on the nonprofit. So as we wind down, man, I got one last question for you. Katie, if you could share one thing you've done in your life that you would recommend our listeners do or experience in theirs, what would that be?
Man, it's hard to do one, but the one thing that I would suggest everyone do is find out who they really are. And I mean, really, like really with yourself, look yourself in the mirror and find, because a lot of times we live our lives according to what other people think we are, like what our parents or our spouse or whatever. But before you leave this world, before you leave this life, before you leave this journey, find out who you are. Because at the end of the day, who you are, who you really are is enough, because that's what God made. And the world needs you. The world needs the real you. Like, I mean, this is no cliche. The world needs everybody that's here, the real them. And so once you do that, you're going to connect with energy. You're going to connect with people that's going to fulfill you. And then you'll be able to rest in peace. That's what resting in peace is. It's when you say, I'm at peace. If this journey ends, I've given the world Kadivas. I've given the world Scott. I know God put me here. And what God put me here for, the universe, I've given them that. If it ends, that's it. But when you know you ain't did what you're supposed to do, or you did something you wasn't supposed to do, and this journey, you're like, I'm not ready for it to be over. I need to do that. At least try to do that. So if I can give any suggestions, it's learn your why. And I'm going to tell you a piggyback on that. You need a mentor to help you most of the times to learn that why. It's harder to learn by yourself. If you can do it by yourself, you'd already know it. You got to get a mentor and somebody to look at you and say, hey, Scott, man, you're really good at this. Did you know that? But Scott will say, no, I really like. No, hold on. I know you really like. I didn't say what you really like. I'm saying, I see when you're with such and such. I see when you're there, everybody, or I see this thing's always successful when you're doing that. Have you noticed that? And you go, man, I didn't even notice that. And then people say, oh, we thought you knew that. I mean, that's why you always did it. Like, no, I just did it because that's just what I do. Boom.
Yeah. Boom. Boom. So if you take three things from today, start reading, start running, and find yourself a mentor. And these are three things that you can take control of that will yield positive impacts on your life. I'm a living proof of it. KD is. Everybody that's under his umbrella. Man, we're going to drop and end on that note right there. KD, thank you so much from myself, from Checkpoint, for coming on the show. And man, I can't wait to get back on the screen and check in with you here in a few months. Thanks again for coming on. And until next time, listeners, be sure to check yourself.